Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm at Microsoft South Africa Day today to chat to the company's Chief Innovation Officer, Clifford De Wit, about all things cloud, including Microsoft's investment into two Azure data centers in South Africa. Now, I'm excited about this conversation today because, at least in part, it was a chat I had with Cliff last year that helped to distill my thinking around launching podcasts as a new platform on Tech Central. We had what I think was meant to be an educational session for me to learn more about Microsoft's cloud offerings. And it was such a great discussion that we said afterwards that we should have podcasted. So here we are attempting to do exactly that today. And there is a lot of cool stuff to talk about. Thank you for joining us today, Cliff.
No, thanks, Duncan. And thank you for having me. I'm glad that I could be a little bit of inspiration. But kudos to you for making it happen. It's amazing. And I've listened to your podcast since you've been putting them out. Compliment you. Really good work, sir. Well done.
Well, thanks so much for that. But let's talk about all things Microsoft and all things cloud. And let's start with the current news. And I think the thing that is everyone talking in this industry at the moment, and that's the recent announcement that Microsoft will build two Azure data centers in South Africa. What does this actually mean for companies, first of all? And secondly, what does it mean for the average Joe?
Yeah, so I mean, we're all obviously very excited by the recent announcements. And I think one of the first things, what we've said was we're actually going to put a region in Africa and specifically in South Africa. And really what that means is we will have a number of data centers here that will allow us basically to have full coverage of not just South Africa, but I think we think about it as an African data center in its own right. Really what it means for businesses to start off with, I think is it's not revolutionary in the set of services that Microsoft offers. I think that the radical difference is that, first of all, having a data center in country or in a region that shares very similar laws from a privacy perspective, from a data residency perspective, obviously has big implications for customers in that region. And so certainly I think that's one of the biggest reasons we've chosen to do that. In that it makes it a lot easier for customers to make use of public cloud without having to worry about necessarily, you know, all the issues of when you patriate data outside a certain jurisdiction. The second thing is what Microsoft's starting to talk about is what we call the edge. And that's where we see cloud computing evolving to, and the needs of having cloud computing closer to its customers. As we started this journey as a company, we built data centers around the world, and we started learning that certain workloads have higher latency, certain workloads require cloud computing much closer to the environments. So as a company, we're certainly doing two things. We're investing in making sure that our data centers are closer to our customers, but we're also making sure that we can take parts of our data center, the functionality of a data center, and even move those into the customer's environment so that the edge of the cloud can either be in our data centers or in the customer's environment. And we think that is a huge difference in where computing is going. Maybe a good example of this is sort of something in manufacturing, or in South Africa's case, mining, I think is one we all really understand. When you're making split-second decisions on processing or production, those are not things that you can have at high latency, because those are things that need to be done at really, really low latency. Sometimes people's lives are at stake on those type of computing decisions. And therefore, we need to bring the latency very close, or even make it inside the operation itself. So I think those are the two things that really excite us about the data center and having it in country.
This data residency thing you speak about, I mean, there's a lot of regulation, not just in South Africa, in many countries around the world, about where you may and may not store your data.
Yeah.
Was that a big factor for South African companies that were considering putting data in the cloud and embracing the cloud computing model? How much of a stumbling block has that been to South African companies specifically adopting this model?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think we've certainly learned a lot having Azure available as a service in South Africa for a number of years now. I think initially it was, but I think as we gain more clarity on what POPI actually means, as CIOs and decision makers start to become more comfortable with cloud, it actually has become less of an issue. And we've certainly seen that same pattern with many of our, you know, our sister organizations in Europe, where, again, they have similar issues where, you know, there are data centers in some countries in Europe but not in other countries of Europe, and they follow similar, although they're all part of the EU, they still sometimes have data residency requirements for very specific countries. So I think it's less of an issue than it was before. I do think, though, there are actual constraints. So in the financial services industry, there are laws that govern what you can and cannot move out the country. And in those cases where it's well understood and the law is very clear, it does become a constraint on what you can do in a public cloud that is out of the country. So it's a little of both. I think there is a fear factor to it, where some CIOs or decision makers just don't want to do it because they don't want to go through the pain or the effort of understanding what they can and can't do. And then there are certain decision makers who actually know really what they can and can't do, and for very valid reasons are blocked from moving their data out the country. So I guess the pattern that we've seen is that adoption has increased. So we've certainly seen broad adoption, for instance, of our Office 365 platform, which in some ways does, you know, move data out of country sometimes, depending on where you reside your mailboxes. And I think there has been broad adoption of those type of technologies. So we certainly have seen people become a fay with cloud computing. I just think the investment that we've made will maybe deal with some of the more technical issues around latency, et cetera, probably in a more favorable way.
You mentioned Office 365. What does this mean for the average Joe, the guy who's perhaps running Windows 10 on his home computer? He subscribes to Office 365 and he uses OneDrive. Does this have any bearing on the speed of the services he gets access to, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it absolutely does. Mm-hmm. So I think, so certainly two things, right? Although sometimes it's hidden from the consumer, I think if you speak to any ISP, they will tell you how much cost it takes to run data internationally, and certainly they do a lot that they can to save at that level. And then I think that impacts, as you say, the average Joe in the street. So I think the average Joe in the street is going to see things like OneDrive synchronization happening at a much, much faster rate. They're going to see things like using Office Online and some of the capabilities happen at a near instantaneous rate. And that's just because local networks are much better connected. There's much less contention on those links than there are on the international links. So I think the experience for the average person is going to be far, far improved. I kind of always make a joke to say that South Africans experience the internet the way we've always experienced it. And sometimes when you do have the chance to go overseas and you experience the internet at a speed where there's low latency, we're always incredibly surprised. I think this is going to show us what low latency internet actually is about in some respects. So again, very exciting.
So what sort of timelines are we looking at here, Cliff? I know that we were looking, I think, at the second quarter of next year, roughly, to start to see these services in country. But has the work actually started yet in deploying the infrastructure on the ground? What does it involve? Do you send over Microsoft engineers from Seattle to do the work? What's actually the process involved here? And when can we expect the first companies and then the first individuals to be able to access these services?
Right. So basically, I mean, our announcement today said that it'll be available in about a year. And typically, we have a very well understood build out process. It involves using partners in countries sometimes, certainly on the physical side, but it will be a completely Microsoft owned and operated data center. So we run it as part of our global data center operations. We build it to those specifications, and we operate it according to those specifications. We are still basically in the process of deciding exactly how it will roll out in country, and we'll make some announcements on that when we have the details. But typically it takes a year to get it in some type of general availability. That's pretty much how we do it. It is a really well understood project. We've done it numerous times. I think it's just, and in some ways, it's really good that it works like that because we see it as part of running our global data center operations. And that's the interesting thing about a data center in certainly the way we think about it. We don't think about them in isolation. We see them as part of the global data center infrastructure. So therefore, somebody can put a workload in the South Africa data center, but choose to have a geo-redundancy to the APAC data center, for instance. So this is why it's really important that it's seen as part of a global offering. And if you look at some of the announcements we made about 2 weeks ago at the Build conference around things like our Cosmos database, where you can literally have a database now, store data in that database and choose to replicate that data across the world into all the DCs across the world, so that anybody accessing a piece of data will get the same latency effect as if they were accessing that data in their own local data center. That's why it's really important we do things like that.
So that local data centers won't necessarily just be used by South African companies. They'll be part of a global grid that anyone can really access if they want to.
Absolutely. And I think that's the interesting thing that not many people think about, is that certainly there are foreign companies that are going to want to provide services and solutions to South African residents or to Southern African residents. So we see a huge demand as it being a global asset, not just a local South African user or make use of local South Africans.
Okay. Cliff, let's get back to brass tacks.
Yeah.
Why is the cloud such a big driving force in the ICT industry?
Yeah, and that's a great question that I actually really enjoy discussing. I think the way I like to think about it is, and I think it was sort of started at the World Economic Forum about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, where we started talking about this concept of the fourth industrial revolution. And I think really where we are in the world right now is sort of, if you think about the first two, you know, the first one was certainly the invention of sort of mechanics and steam, where we really made a fundamental shift in us almost being subsistence farming based as a society. I think the second revolution was when we invented the automobile, but probably more defined by that was the electricity and what electricity did to the way we think about productivity. And if you really think about it, electricity really became a utility. Mm. And I think if you look at one sort of factor that defines what we call an industrial revolution, it's that there is a utility, and that utility allows other things to happen. So, you know, mechanics was the first one. The second one, electricity became the utility, and that allowed things like the light globe to be invented, like mechanical lines turning into electric lines, et cetera, et cetera. We kind of think about the third industrial revolution as the age of the microchip, and when people started having access to mobile devices, intelligent devices. The reason I think cloud computing is becoming so important is we're moving into this concept of the fourth industrial revolution, where we are starting to introduce concepts like machine learning, cognitive services, artificial intelligence. And this is fundamentally different from just having a computer. This is having what we call pervasive computing. And I think about it in two broad ways. I think about it in what we have on client devices. So in other words, right now, computing is really starting to become incredibly pervasive on the user level. Most people have access to some type of digital device. And not only that, it's starting to really almost augment their lifestyle. You know, there have been several discussions about what happens when you take people's mobile phones away from them. But it's really is fundamentally changing the way I think human society works. We're reliant on those devices to give us information, tell us what to do, interact with other human beings. And on the back end of that, and I think this is coming to your question, most of this is powered by cloud computing, because at present rate, we are creating data on these devices, on these Internet of Things capabilities at such a rate. There was one stat the other day that said we've produced 90% of the world's data in the last 2 years. We need massive resources to both deal with the computational capability of that amount of data and those amount of resources, and to deal with these new emerging technologies at a near real-time rate. And I think that's why cloud computing is so exciting, because it's giving us for the first time a massive computing resource to allow us to understand the data we're producing, give us insight into the data that we have, and fundamentally make a difference in the lives that we lead. And I think that is the essence of what we think about this fourth industrial revolution, where we're moving from just basic storage to starting to understand and make fundamental decisions on productivity through this cloud computing resources. And that's why fundamentally we believe that having a data center investment in the country is so important, because if we don't do something like this, effectively, we were left out of the fourth industrial revolution as a continent, as a country. And we think it's an incredibly important investment to make in our society.
Microsoft will be the first major international cloud provider to build infrastructure in South Africa. How much of an advantage, an early advantage, is that going to give you, do you think?
I guess we hope that it is going to give us an advantage. No doubt, I'm sure other people are thinking about it. You know, we don't comment on what our competitors are doing. But we think that being first to market will give us an advantage. We think that certainly we've signaled that we believe in the capability of South Africa and the continent. I think we have done that for many years. So our For Africa initiative, for instance, for the last number of years has said we believe in investing in emerging markets, and we'll continue to do so. And I think as a company, you know, if you just kind of read our mission statement, allowing people to reach their full potential, businesses and companies, we think that investing in emerging markets is a really important way to do that. And so I think having a data center capability will show to us and to the rest of the world what we really can do in emerging market contexts. You know, we see marvelous examples of what innovation can do in a rural or an emerging context. And those solutions are not always the same as what comes out of mature markets. I think everybody looks at the M-Pesa example and what happens when you have an unbanked society and you give it capabilities. But you know, we have numerous examples. There's a small startup in Cape Town that we've supported over the years that is pretty much redefining how how transportation works and mapping formal and informal transportation that really isn't a big requirement in let's say, in a mature market. So there's numerous examples, I think, that where cloud computing will take innovation in an emerging context and enable it.
And I suppose having a data center on the ground here with this full stack of services will empower the developer community as well to do interesting things which perhaps they otherwise couldn't have done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you nailed it on the head, right? When we look at sort of what developers are doing these days, I think we kind of, everybody says that it's never been a better time to be a developer, but I think that cliche is absolutely true because I think what cloud computing does is takes a lot of that heavy lifting off the table where you needed to have access to a data center. And in many cases before cloud computing, that was incredibly cost prohibitive. So even if you had a really great idea, the chances were that you probably wouldn't get your idea to life because you either didn't have the financial resource, you didn't have the technical capability or the wherewithal to deliver it. I think what cloud computing is doing is it's democratizing that landscape to a large extent. We're now with well-understood frameworks in the cloud, and yes, you're still going to have some technical skills, but the barrier for entry is a much lower here. And really, you can take your idea and bring it to life at internet scale or at hyperscale much, much easier than you would in even 5 or 10 years ago, certainly. So we do think that we're going to see very interesting capabilities emerge. And I think, again, the fact that it's resident here will mean that people will target it, that the services will run at a speed that's acceptable to users, and we'll see a lot more innovation coming out because of the data center investment, yeah.
Okay. Cliff, imagine for a moment that I'm the non-technical CEO of a large South African company.
Right.
Whose IT department is telling me that they need to embrace cloud computing.
Right.
Now, you're invited to come and talk to me give me the pitch on why my company needs to embrace cloud. Now, I don't know anything about tech. I hear what my IT guys tell me, but I'm really not plugged into this world.
Right.
What is your message to that sort of person?
Yeah, so my standards kind of explanation to non-tech people on why cloud is important is to go down the utility line.
Right.
What I would say is something like, you know, the times have changed, and the days of you having to run your own computing operations, which you had to do because you didn't have a choice to do it a couple of years ago, you now have options. And those options mean that you can go and buy computing at a utility level, much like we think about buying electricity from an electricity supplier without even thinking about what the complexities are of generating that electricity or distributing that electricity. We are really moving into that era where cloud computing is becoming a utility. The next kind of question you get after that is the differentiation question, right? Because in many cases, previously, just like we kind of discussed around the developer side, having a large data center for a business person was a differentiator because if they could outgun or out-deliver their competition, they probably had an edge. These days, the utility doesn't really give you a competitive advantage. Your innovation gives you a competitive advantage. The services that you offer through your company gives you a competitive advantage. And so why spend your resources, your time, your effort, your people's resources on managing a utility environment when you could free up that environment and allow them to actually produce solutions for your customers? So my advice is think about the part of your operations at a utility. Give those to people who know how to do that at utility scale and free up the servers, free up the time, the resources to actually concentrate on what's important to the business. And I think when that penny drops, cloud computing becomes a very, very compelling argument in almost every business. Because there probably isn't a business today that doesn't require some type of digital capability. Again, I think it's very much tied to this fourth industrial revolution that we talk about, where we're starting to see, because computing is becoming so pervasive in every part of our lives, it's becoming pervasive in any industry. Even if you just take agriculture, for instance, today, that was traditionally a very manual industry where really you probably wouldn't find many farmers walking around with computers. These days, if you look at what's happening in that industry today and how things like predictive analytics are allowing people to choose which crops to grow at which time, they're giving them advice on based on the soil that they have in their environment, what's the correct seed density, et cetera, we are seeing productions of milk go through the roof because people know exactly how much to feed their cows, when to feed them, how to carve them, et cetera, These are industries that are getting completely disrupted. And when we say disrupted, I think sometimes people think about disruption as a bad thing. Actually, if you kind of look at what this is doing, it's allowing people to become actually more productive. It's allowing people to take the resources that they have and make them more efficient. And so in this kind of disruption, I think it's a very good thing, actually. So that's kind of the message that lands with most CEOs.
It has an impact on jobs, though, as well. I mean, it certainly changes the nature of work.
It does.
Does it? I mean, I've read plenty of people suggesting that that this is also a job destroyer, potentially.
So
while it certainly makes companies more efficient, maybe it has a dark side to it as well, potentially.
Yeah, and I think there are certainly people that weigh in on the plus side and on the negative side, right? Mm-hmm. We have publicly said as a company, and I think our CEO publicly got up the other day and said that with great power comes great responsibility, right? And so certainly I think there's two aspects to this. Mm-hmm. First of all, there's definitely going to be a dividend, some type of social dividend that comes out of cloud computing. There's no question about it. I think the thing is that if you kind of break this down, it is not something that we're unused to. Humans have evolved to have tools that augment their lives. If you think about, caveman inventing a hammer or a mechanic all of a sudden having a welder, those are all capabilities where we've augmented our normal day-to-day lives with a tool or a machine that has made our lives quicker, easier, or faster, right? Getting in a car and going to work versus getting on a horse, right, has saved you endless amount of time. We might argue the traffic is a distractor there, but the question is, what do you do with the dividend? Because that time saving results in something, right? Now, if the dividend is used for bad, I think there could be a negative connotation. But if the dividend is used for good, we could radically increase the productivity of our lives, certainly probably increase the quality of our lives going forward. And so I think as Microsoft, we certainly believe and are building capabilities around what do we do with the dividend that we have that it can be used for social good, that it can be used to improve people's lives. And I think that honestly is the trajectory that we see for this. And I guess that's the way it will actually play out. Only society and time can dictate.
I suppose with every major upset, no, it's not the right word. With every major technological revolution that we've seen from the Industrial Revolution onwards and even before that,
correct,
there were naysayers, people who said this is going to destroy society,
correct,
this is going to set us back, people are not going to be able to work anymore, all these sort of things. But that never happens. The society seems to go forward. And are you saying that this cloud computing is going to be the same?
Exactly. Mm. That's exactly the philosophy we have. And I think actually it's a great point you raise. If you look at the average GDP of the world, through all the revolutions, our lifestyles and our GDP has grown substantially over the last four industrial revolutions. They were stagnant, and people's qualities of lives were pretty much the same before any of those revolutions.
Yeah.
So actually, if you look at sort of the quality of our lives, even over the last 60 years, with the two revolutions maybe our generations have lived through, our quality of life has increased markedly over the last 60 years in the amount of available capabilities we have, the time we have, and the resources that we have. So we certainly see that if the dividend is used for good, it'll certainly make an improvement in our lives.
Let's talk a bit about the South African situation specifically. I know these data centers are being built with the African continent in mind, but South Africa is in a recession officially. We've been downgraded. We've seen disinvestments by some big companies, General Motors. In fact, on the same day that Microsoft announced it was making this investment, announced that it was pulling out of the country. We've seen Tata Communications selling their stake in Neotel to a Pan-African group. There's been lots of speculation in recent weeks about disinvestments from the country, but here's Microsoft putting a stake in the ground, making a significant investment in these data centers. Why?
Look, I think it's important for us as part of our I think I said it previously, is that we definitely believe in the power of emerging markets. I think if you honestly believe in allowing people to realize their full potential, people and businesses, emerging markets certainly have a role to play in that. And so we think, probably as a company, that is an it's a wise investment, both in the ingenuity that we have in our society, the way society is going from a digitalization perspective, and certainly we think that the investment will be returned, both in allowing people to realize the potential, but certainly in creating a larger digital economy in emerging markets. And I think all the trends point to that direction, right? Is that if we allow people to give people digital capabilities, economies will grow, GDP will increase, and we certainly see it as a long-term bet on the continent and the country. And honestly, that's the way we see it, right? So maybe it is that we are in a fundamental part of what defines, you know, the growing trends in economy, and that data center services and certainly software on the top of that is certainly an industry that still remains to grow and grow at an aggressive rate. And I guess that's why we choose to invest.
Okay. But it's a long-term bet. You believe this economy is in good shape in the long term. Otherwise, I guess you wouldn't be coming here.
Well, exactly.
I want to talk about Microsoft. I find Microsoft to be a fascinating company. It was founded in the mid-1970s.
Right.
It's been through a number of major industry shifts. In fact, led to the first major shift in the industry in those days, and the move to client-server computing and away from the mainframe.
Right.
But it's been through a number of tectonic shifts, I suppose I could call them, in that time. We saw the rise of the internet, for example, and there was talk that Microsoft was going to miss that wave, but it didn't. It could be argued, I suppose, that it missed the mobile smartphone wave, and we can look at the case study of the acquisition of Nokia and all that happens there.
Right.
But we're in a third shift now, and that's into the era of cloud computing, and it certainly looks like Microsoft is going to be a leader in that space. We've seen many companies try and turn the ship. I mean, IBM is probably a classic example of a company that's really struggled to reinvent itself. Microsoft seems to do it with a lot more panache, if you like, sometimes.
Right.
It certainly missed the mobile boat, but it's done well in this cloud era. It's done well in the internet paradigm.
Right.
How does the company do it? I mean, this is a massive company. It must have bureaucratic issues. Every large company does.
Right.
How do you turn a ship of this size when the industry turns on its head every so often?
Right. I personally think about it in two ways, right? I think, first of all, you need an organization that has certainly if you're a technology company, that has relevant engineering offers and solutions to provide. And I think one thing Microsoft's really always been good at is probably not having a single line of focus on a particular technology. I think we've always done well at producing platforms or services that are probably not too industry specific. And I think we've always done reasonably well in understanding where the industry trends are going to go and investing ahead of the curve. I think the second thing we do really well is we democratize technology, as I like to call it. We make it accessible for average people, average businesses, more so. So we don't specialize too much, and we make sure that when we do offer a service, it's a good value-added service and it provides value to companies big and small. Then I think we think about the people and the change aspects of that. I think one thing the organization's always been very good at is then aligning its people and its organizational structure behind that. And I think that takes a bunch of courage, to be honest with you. And probably one of the things I admire most about their company is the courage to align its people, align its organizations about behind these big changes, as you refer to. And sometimes that means being bold and taking some big bets, and certainly cloud computing has been one of those examples. But I think when we're sure about where it's going, we very quickly align our company, our objectives, and get our people aligned behind those. And I think that's really what determines how we can snap to these changes in, you know, in industry trends.
But there must be pushback. I mean, there's always stasis within organizations.
Of course.
How do you get the whole organization behind this rallying call of cloud computing?
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. It's not as simple as that. And of course, there's pushback. But I think what we do well is if you have a North Star that's aligned behind not just the company and its products, but if you have a North Star, Bill Gates' era, putting a PC on every desk in every home, right? Today's kind of mission statement for us, allowing people and businesses to realize their full potential. That allows people to orientate themselves in a personal way to the company's objectives. And I find that a very powerful way for people to say, okay, this is the way we're going, but this is why we're doing this. Mm. If you can answer the why question, you get people's hearts and minds and passion behind the change. And it doesn't just become a decree from the top of the company that says, okay, we're going to go this way. Don't worry about why we're going this way. And I think when we explain that to our people, when we take people with on the journey of why we're changing, you tend to get a lot more buy-in than an executive order that comes from up above. So certainly from my perspective, and for me personally, I think these changes make a lot of personal sense, and not just at the pure company level, but also in, I guess, our responsibility to society in the various countries that we live in throughout the world. We honestly believe that our technology does a lot of good, does a lot of good business, but also makes a lot of changes to people's lives. And I think that makes a very, very important, it's a very important element of people change process at the end of the day. Mm. So honestly, that's why I think we often get it right, is a strong culture inside the company. Mm.
And you're right about the I hadn't thought of that before, the Microsoft payoff line, if I can call it that.
Yeah.
In many organizations, that's something that the marketing department comes up
Correct.
With, and it's used in advertising, and that's it. But here, you almost seem to embrace that message right through the organization.
Exactly. And you're spot on. It shouldn't just be a payoff line that's on the marketing. It's if you need your people to live that, and that's why it's done very carefully. And we all think about what it really means in our day-to-day jobs, right? And of course, we internalize that and interpret it in our own way in some respects. But I think it makes a huge difference in the way you shift an organization.
Microsoft's culture has also changed quite a lot, I found. And maybe it's been driven by Satya Nadella, the new
right.
CEO. But certainly, 10 years ago, Microsoft was perhaps a more confrontational organization, especially when it came to competitor technologies. Today, the company embraces alternative operating systems, for example, on Android. Your Office suite is available, and it's
yeah.
available on Apple's iOS as well.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I think that would have been almost unthinkable. I remember the days when Steve Ballmer, the former CEO, referred to the license behind Linux as a cancer. today, Microsoft embraces open source software.
Right.
What's led to that sort of change in thinking over this time, do you think?
Yeah, I think sometimes as an industry, you also need to mature sometimes. Certainly, I think sometimes a change in leadership does have an effect on a company.
Mm.
But I think as maybe it is something that Satya has brought into the organization, is as we think about the world we live in, the ecosystem we live in, I guess we've realized that Microsoft will never own, cannot own an entire ecosystem end to end. And I think once we accept that fact, you become a lot more embracing of what alternative technologies can do. I think you also realize that the sum of the parts is much bigger than the one individual, right? So we've and I guess that's why we do what we do. When we embracing of open source technologies, of alternative technologies, well, we're not competing with each other. We're actually growing the value of the IT ecosystem, and everybody wins in that kind of if you have that kind of mindset. Satya uses something that he calls growth mindset. It's a book that Carol Dweck wrote, and we talk that kind of concept makes you think a lot about how you as an individual think about growth, where there is potential, and not just being open to new ideas. And I think a lot of us have internalized that, and certainly sets a strategy for the company. So I think it is a different world certainly in the IT ecosystem. I think we all have a place, if I can put it that way. And I think there's value to be delivered to customers, but also to businesses making money, of being much more open. And I think we've certainly proven that with this strategy. So, yeah, I think it is different.
It's fascinating to watch as an outsider, I must say, to see how this organization has fundamentally changed over the years.
Right.
And it always amazes me as an outsider how a company of this size can go through this level of change with such apparent ease.
Right. Yeah, honestly, I think the golden word there is culture.
Mm.
I think if you have the correct culture, you create the correct culture, you can shift a very big organization quite eloquently or quite elegantly. If you have a bad culture, it doesn't matter how good your technology is, how good anything is, it is very difficult.
Mm. Clifford De Wit is Chief Innovation Officer at Microsoft South Africa. This has been a fascinating discussion this morning. Cliff, thanks for joining us on the Tech Central podcast.
Thanks, Duncan. Thank you so much for having me.